Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Benos Podcast. And today's episode features Martina Motum. She's the wife of Brock Motum, who most NBA experts will know. And it's a different podcast because we talked about her life, her background story, and her daily challenges that she deals with as the player's wife. What not many people think about, I think it's important to also register and understand that there's a certain amount of sacrifice and a certain amount of challenges to deal with on a daily basis. And Martina talked today a lot about her challenges, a certain amount of identity crisis, and certain things that she had to deal with and get within herself to find out what it really is all about. She also talked about her career, rejuvenating her career, and we talked about some advice that she had for men and women in this side of the story, in this special business that we're in. So it's a unique story. It's a unique life that we're living. And she and her situation is definitely doing so as well. And please enjoy. Please subscribe to this channel. Also find Martina on Instagram and YouTube. Please leave a comment. Leave a 5-star review if you liked it. And we'll be looking to add some more content here pretty soon. So I appreciate you being here, and listen to me soon again. Martina, what's up? What's going on?
What's up? How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to the best, biggest sports show in the world. Not yet, but in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
we're growing. We're growing. And you're the first woman on here. So congratulations on that.
I'm very, very proud. Thank you so much.
So yeah, I was thinking of different topics, and I thought of a topic that's very unusual because nobody thinks about it, and I don't know how much it affects you to be the wife of, you know, if you ever had issues, or maybe it changed with time. But I wanted to talk about the life of a wife, of a player's wife. And that's why I thought of you, and I thought to invite you to talk a little bit about your background and a little bit about the life behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, so it's, I don't know, do you just want me to go straight in and tell you?
No, I will drill you with questions. Don't worry. We'll get to that.
Okay.
But to give I just wanted to give some context for the listeners and the viewers. So before we go into the specifics, because this is you know that for sure, this is an educational podcast. So we're trying to educate people in all different directions, because the sports industry, especially basketball, has lots of different avenues. And today we're going to explore your avenue. But before we go into the specifics, we're going to explore a little bit of your background. So you are from Lithuania, and unlike many people that don't understand, we are Lithuanians and we speak English, which is fine with me. But this is for a bigger audience. And maybe you can give a little bit of background where you grew up in Lithuania and how you met Brock Motum, who was a player at Žalgiris at that time.
Okay, so I'm from the best city in Lithuania, Kaunas. Thank you very much.
I'm wearing green too, so.
I know, I'm like, who represent it? yeah, so I grew up in Kaunas, was born in Kaunas. My parents moved to Denmark when I was 15. I moved right after a year, so I was 16 when I moved to Denmark. Finished ninth grade in Lithuania, but that was my last. And then I finished 10th grade in Danish, which I didn't know Danish before I moved to Denmark, but I took half a year in 10th grade to actually, there was a teacher sitting next to me trying to teach me, and I had like extra lessons and whatever. And then the year after, then I started the 10th grade. So I did 10th grade basically 2 years. You know, the same thing, but in Danish. And I then graduated 10th grade in Danish, which was, I mean, pretty impressive thinking about now. Back then, I just, okay, that's something I had to do, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a crazy language, a crazy language. But yeah, I still remember some things and speak it sometimes when I hear it. It's kind of fun. Then My high school was International Baccalaureate, which I did also in Denmark, but I lived at the boarding school because at that time there was no, like very few international schools. So eventually I changed, I guess I was not going to do high school and university in Danish because my level was like, okay, I graduated things and stuff, but like I wanted to do, at that time I wanted to do sports journalism, which is funny because that's what I'm doing now, but you know. But I wasn't, my Danish wasn't good enough to do sport like journalism in Danish, you know? So like I went to international school and that was 3 years at the living at the boarding school. And it was so much fun. International crowd. Awesome. My bachelor, I moved to London to do my bachelor in sports management. And then my master's is with Euroleague. It's also sports marketing and management. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you see that basketball pattern or sports pattern, to be precise, going along. But I guess the love for basketball, it started very, very young. Like when, you know, Kona Sports Hall, like that was like one of my first games when I was 12. And I was like standing there, that made such a big impression on me. And I played basketball at the time as well. I just remember one thought that like it made me so happy that being there, that I was like, I need to do everything possible to like be a part of this. Mm. And now being a wife, it's weird because that was not the point then. Like, that's not what I was thinking back then. I was thinking like, what can I do to be a part of like organization? You know, at 12, what kind of organization? I don't know yeah. much. I was like, yeah. Could I be a female coach? I was telling people, I was like telling my dad, I'm like, I'm going to train. Cause me and my dad would watch EuroLeague every Thursday back then. Like that was our ritual. And, it's like, Dad, I want to be a female coach. Yeah, Dad is like, you know, good luck with that. He wasn't like ruining my dreams at that, but like, you know, even now thinking like, okay, I could, you know, female coaches and female basketball, but I was interested in male basketball. I love it to date. And so then I was thinking sports psychology. I was thinking what is possible, like make myself like a job, like in a club. And then, long story short, I, after London, finishing my bachelor, I went to EuroLeague Masters, which was like doing all the time I was studying. I was already dreaming about the end goal, which was for me, end goal was the Masters. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that was a great experience. I met a lot of people and I got an internship in Žalgiris. So that was
and this weird is where... Yeah. That was the year. Was that the first year Brock was in Žalgiris, or was the first year, right?
Yeah, that was. We literally came. I came to Lithuania after 9.5 years of not living in Lithuania, and he came to Lithuania for the first time. Like, oh, that summer he was playing. What was it? Year.
No. What year was it?
2015. It was so, like World Cup, like a. Australian national team was there. You know what I mean? They were playing something.
So maybe it was summer of 2014 because it was the yes. it was the Spain World Cup. So yes, maybe because exactly. They came for friendlies almost every summer. So some summers they came to Lithuania without being a World Cup or Olympics. They came just to have some friendlies, and then they went back
in Cholet or something. Brock still tells me about it. He's like, that's all I knew about Lithuania. I was like, yeah, that's definitely with all the respect to Cholet, like this is not the best place to, you know, show off our country, like for people from Australia, like if they're coming, they don't know where the hell they're coming, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
If they come to Cholet, they're like, where am I?
Yeah,
so we a month plus minus, we moved to Lithuania at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
Yeah. And then I think 2 months in, we met at the club, obviously.
At the club, like at the club or at the club?
No, at the basketball club. Okay, so I'm such a basketball, like for me, the only club that exists is a basketball club, okay?
Well, I get it. I was just joking.
I get it. But yeah, so at the basketball club.
So you started to date, and did you go into any kind of expectations into the relationship once you started to get serious, or was it just kind of open and see? Because you know that basketball players are basically nomads. You know, they move around, they move around the world, and there's a certain type of mentality or a certain type of attitude you have to have, knowing what you're getting yourself into, because the stability of a structured life, a traditional life, is not present. So there is a certain amount of time, and the player's life is different than coach's life, because player's life is limited to a certain age. And then, you know, maybe afterwards there's a certain sort of direction. But with Brock's in the middle of his career, you met, you knew that you was going to move. So did you go into some kind of expectations, or did you have a little open mindset to everything?
So at that point, like, you know, you meet and dating, you kind of don't like, you like each other, obviously. So you keep seeing each other. And then, you know, that period, like, it's like, you kind of like, it's too soon to think about the future like that, but like, yep, you enjoy each other's company, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was a time that, obviously I wasn't thinking about the first whole season, because it was just, you know, new and fresh, and I had my new job and everything was like, you know, it was amazing. Then the first time, so during that summer, the off season, Brock went to the Olympics and, mm-hmm, in Rio, then he was going to come back to Kaunas. Mm-hmm. And that's when we moved in together. So then that season we lived together. It was cool. And suddenly, like, okay, he's doing very good. Like, the second season for Brock and Jalgers was amazing. And okay, that's now we're in, it's like, okay, the moving is coming into the picture, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess you see basketball players around that, okay, they move around, but like, it doesn't, at those 2 years, the first, like, I'd say 1.5 years, maybe, you know, I wasn't thinking about it like, strategically, like, what's gonna happen, until it's like, okay, the end of the second season or towards the end, that you're like, okay, most likely we will be moving.
So do you think about like your giving up your career or job wise and thinking about like, all right, now I'm gonna have to, because there's a certain amount of leaving behind, but also leaving the door for something new ahead of you, you know, like there's give and take in that. So did you think about your job, your career at that time, or was it something that you're like, all right, next step, next stage, open, whatever happens?
So there was a little situation that happened. So for last 5 months of the season, I was not working anymore.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So that chapter was over for me before we had to move. So that made things very easy, because as you say, making the decision of like stopping my career and, you know, totally and moving to another country, which I technically moved to back to Lithuania after all this time to start my career, you know, it would have been very tough. Well, that sort of was a decision made for me, kind of. Already.
Yeah.
So it was easy. I was sort of like, okay, I'm done with that chapter. So what's next? I was taking it in like with the open hand and open hands and mind, you know.
It was the decision was made for you, basically. I mean, it was easier, not for you, but the decision was easier to make and not think about the repercussions of giving up, leaving something behind. You were just kind of like a free agent, basically, in terms of job. And then you did move to Istanbul. That was the next step. And obviously, being in a foreign country, both of you together, but Brock being on the road a lot, and you spending some alone time in a foreign country, in a different country. How was that for you? What went through your mind? How did you deal with the loneliness that comes of a expat in a foreign country?
So another thing that with moving, I didn't have a big problem with at all, because I've already moved from Lithuania to Denmark to London back to Lithuania, you know? So that for me was not like, I already lived an expat life sort of. So it was, I was like, I was excited more than anything.
Yeah.
And then Istanbul, in the beginning, to be honest, it hit hard. Like, because first of all, even if I wasn't working in Lithuania for the last few months, but like, it's still sort of your environment that you've, you know, it's my home country after all, even though I have not lived there for almost 10 years, but like, it's, you know, your language, your over the last 2 years living there, I made new friends again and, like, you know, created my life there. And then Istanbul was like, okay, so first of all, I know nobody. It's a new place, new environment. As I love Istanbul and Turkey so much. I say that after having lived there for 3 years now, that, like, in the beginning, it just looks so crazy. Like,
and new language too. I mean, there's
language.
Yeah.
New language, but like, and like, this life, I think it takes a while to get used to. Like, they live a crazy life. They drive crazy. You need to just get into that, you know, get into that groove of things. And, yeah. And like, it takes a while. It can take you by surprise, you know, in the beginning. So it was crazy. Like, and funny enough, Brock left. We moved to Istanbul and he left, I think, 2 days after. And we moved from Australia. So jet lag and everything. And then 2 days after, he leaves for Slovakia, I think. Mm-hmm. Sorry. That anyway, preseason started. So he goes, right?
Yeah.
And I'm there. I remember this so that, like, that probably puts, it's a good story to explain how, like, the Istanbul life started. Like, the manager of FS, he's like, oh, you need to pick up the car. And the first thing I said when I landed, I was like, I'm not driving here. But I was like, I need to pick up the car because Brock is gone for, I think, 2 or 3 weeks, you know? So, and I'm not going to live in the hotel for those weeks. Like, I need to move our stuff from the hotel to the apartment that we picked in those 2 days that we were there before he left. So, and someone picks me up from the hotel. I drive to the club. They're like, okay, this is the key. This is your car. Peace. I was telling you, it took me like good 10 minutes to like make myself start driving. And I'm like, I love driving. It's not like, you know, I'm okay. Probably everyone has said it ever, but like, I'm a good driver. I feel very confident behind the wheel. But just Turkey, like, it hit me in the first, like, there's no rules. You know, I'm just used to a little bit of rules while driving. So that I was like, I sat there and like, it was so hot and I'm sitting there in the car that I'm like, I need to go. Like, I have to like prepare myself for this to like, for the first time to hit the streets, you know, of Istanbul. And like, I was like, okay, fine. Like, I did it. And now I just, there's nothing more I like than driving in Istanbul. I think this is the adrenaline I get. And like, it's totally my style and it's crazy. And I love it. But the first impression, I was like, oh, geez.
Yeah, that's Istanbul is the only city, and I've traveled a lot. I've been to basically every continent so far except Africa, but and Antarctica I haven't been to. But I Istanbul is the only city that if I fly over and I see the whole structure of the city, it's the most intimidating city. I would call it, it's a megapolis. You know, like you just don't, you see that and it's just a whole bunch of everything in once, in one area, and you feel like an ant going into there. So I can imagine for the first time driving, it's gonna be a constant anxiety attack.
For sure. And like, I didn't know where the shops were. I didn't know anything. And everything I look on the map, it's like 25 minute drive. Like, from the club to our home, it was like 7. So I was like, fine, you know, and I'm like, I need to go to the shop. That's like, oh my God, it was crazy. But then now looking back at like I love going to Istanbul, and it's weird because that city feels like home, you know, to some extent, it feels like home. Like, you know, things, you know, for Brock and I always say, like, if you can, in the city like this, if you can go from point A to B, that is far enough without a map, like, yeah, you're cool. You know what I mean? And that's such an accomplishment when you actually finally do it, you know, because it's like you said, it's gigantic.
Achievement.
Yeah, exactly. It's an achievement. It makes you feel good. And then every time now when we go back, it's like, it really feels like home. Like, it's an amazing place.
So during that time when you were alone and you were building, you're, like you said, you left a lot of your life, a lot of friendships, a lot of family behind. How did you end up building your social circle back up in Turkey, in Istanbul, without knowing the language? And, you know, obviously, like, you're probably interacting with the family of the teammates, your family and the club. But how did you embrace. I like to call this English word embrace is probably one of my favorite words, because you can embrace any situation. It's just on your mindset. How did you go through that period of building a new social life and circle in Istanbul?
So I think in this life of basketball, whatever, like it's you get to, like, you're kind of thrown in to a group of people already. You know what I mean? Which makes it a lot easier. It's not like we have to move, you know, we moved quite a bit. Like, it's not that we have to move to completely a new place that is like, we know nobody. You always, like, Brock has 11 teammates plus coaches, and they have wives. Yep. They have, you know what I mean? So it's already like a circle, and everyone's really friendly, and it's amazing. Like, I guess I never really had a problem meeting people and, like, socializing and talking. Like, that's, I love doing that. So it's, you know, it's never been like a thing for me. So I enjoyed it. It's always like you find your people, you know, mm-hmm. over a certain amount of time. You just find people who, like, you get along with better, or like, you know, it's, you know, more like your vibe or whatever. But I wouldn't say, like, there's never been bad people. Do you know what I mean? It's always people on your level, people on, like, your situation. So it's sort of like makes it easy. Like, you can talk to the wives about, like, things that, you know, I sometimes say that only basketball wives would understand, you know, like, because if you talk to anyone else about your problems with people, like, oh my God, you're so, like, a problem in normal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They put it down sort of because everyone thinks that, oh, this is such a glamorous life and this is so awesome and you should have no problems whatsoever. But, like, but then, you know, the end of the season hits and you're like, okay, are we packing the things? Is the plus one on? Or, like, do you know what I mean? All these things, like, do we pack and, like, pack everything and we're out? Or, like, you know, the little, like, natural things that you do, like, you know.
Yeah, so that's the thing that, like, we can get to as well. Like, what are the major question marks during the season, during the life of like, behind the scenes that you have as Brock's career is going on? And you have, like, there's a lot of uncertainty with contracts, but do you talk it out? Do you wait to the situation? Like, you have to be very flexible in that kind of lifestyle.
You do, and I guess you want it or not, however flexible you are, like, it's still stressful if the situation occurs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I always tell Brock, which is like, I don't know if men do that, because he looks at me weird when I tell him. I was like, listen to your gut.
I listen to my gut only. I listen to my gut only.
You know what I mean? So, and I think you have to, like, work on it to know what, like, you know what I mean? If you've never listened to your gut, it's hard for you to just start listening to it. But, like, when you feel things, like, I don't know, it's really hard to understand. Like, people I don't want anyone to think that I'm, like, crazy. But you know what I mean? There are things where I'm like, okay, I just feel if it's a good thing, if it's the right thing, if it's not the right thing. And I'm like, I push Brock to do that. But if a person is not used to doing that, he's like, what? You know? So I think that, I don't know. So you just wait it out. You see what's happening. And of course, sometimes you make decisions that, you know, maybe you should have not made that decision. Things happen.
So during the time when you're alone, and you obviously contemplate a lot about your own life, about what you're doing there. Did you ever experience some sort of identity crisis where you thought, like, who am I and what am I doing here? What's my career? What am I? Because Brock's life is going, like, Brock is living the team life. He's playing, he's practicing, preparation. He comes home, he leaves, and you're there. You obviously, like you said, you have acquaintances from the club, from the other teams, teammates, wives, but at some point you go into your own self and you listen to your gut and you're thinking about your mind. Like, you can't get out of your own head sometimes when you're by yourself and you're thinking about, what the hell am I doing with my life? Was that something that was occurring?
That was for sure. That was for sure really hard. Like, so yes, like, what am I doing? Because, like you said, he's progressing in his career. Like, he's doing things for himself. Like, you know, for us. But, like, you know, he's like, well, me, like, especially when I working for Žalgiris, and I was doing YouTube, I was doing videos, interviews, and I was doing social media communications. I love that part of sports, and I think I really found my fit in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard to then try to find something. Like I had my dream job already, you know, and by the time that I was 27, I already had my dream job. And like, it's done now. Like, mm-hmm. what is the next thing that I could do that I'm not just going to sit at home? Like, it's just, it drives myself like crazy. I could drive myself crazy if I would just do that. It's just impossible for me. So there were things that I'm like, okay, what's the next dream? Like, what could I do? Could potentially you can have, you know, you have the like sort of resources a little bit to like learn anything what you want. You can start whatever you kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can start anything. But for me, it was really tough to find that thing, like to find what is the next thing that like I love as much as I love basketball, you know?
So how did you go about, because I'm keep digging now, because I feel like you're going somewhere now towards the path of,
I hope I'm not going to get emotional here, but
no, we're going to get both emotional because I'm an emotional person too. But there is some sort of like rediscovering yourself, right? So what were the hooks that you found to hang on to?
So in the beginning, meditation was my thing. Like
okay.
I would do just to like keep myself sane a little bit, you know, like, cause there would be so much emotion like there and there. And then the basketball thing was always like, and still is like the love, my passion, you know? So like finding something else that's kind of like I would like doing, it was really hard. So like, and then there's so many ideas that I have, and suddenly I always keep pushing them down because I'm like, I just want to feel that passion for something as much as I did before, you know? And then it's really hard. So like meditation helped a lot. Calm app for the win. That was amazing. So another thing, working out. I worked out a lot since, you know, I've been active for my whole life playing basketball and whatnot. And then there was a gym in our building, which literally Brock would go to practice, I'd go to the gym.
Yep.
I'm like, he's to this day thinks I'm crazy. He's like, I don't know if I would work out as much if I was not playing basketball. And he's like, how can you motivate yourself so much to actually go there every day? I'm like, I don't know. Cause otherwise I know, you know, something bad would happen. So,
100%, like, I go 100%, there. 100%. I can add on to that because I talk about it publicly too. I don't care. Like there's some demons inside of you that inside of me as well. Like I have to conquer them because they come out. And especially because I'm naturally active, I'm naturally really like creative. I try to think, I try to do certain things. I have to discover when I travel. I try to, and if I don't do something for a couple of days, and my body's used to working out, I go crazy. So there's a certain amount of, and Joe Rogan talks about it, there's a certain amount of energy you have to expend in order to calm yourself down from the inside, because you conquer them, and it's something. Something calm comes over you because people like you, like if you're sitting all day and you just let the mind race, you don't do anything, you start getting sluggish, you start feeling depressed, you start feeling a little bit lazy. And this thing's, it's a trickle down effect. It starts crumble, like you crumble from the inside. So whenever I feel that oncoming and I feel sometimes there's anxiety comes over you, I have to, like, I can't run too much because of my knees, but I try to work out. I try to run. I try to break a sweat. And then at some point, it just kind of, once you break a sweat, you raise your blood levels and then your blood pressure. And then it just kind of like, it takes the opposite effect. It's counterintuitive, but it does help to calm you down.
And especially like, I'm going to go to the third thing where books, I read and read and read, but like, I could not necessarily read and focus because like you said, like the mind, it just goes. And I feel like, okay, I'm having a coffee and reading a book, but at the same time, I have to reread the page like twice because like my mind just goes, you know, and it annoys me. So then after the gym, then I can actually read, you know, because my body's already like, okay, I've you know, done the work now. Like,
yep.
So I can like calmly, you know, read. So I think like meditation, workouts and books were like the saviors for the first time. Like it was stressful. And sometimes I could feel the stress creeping on, like my stress of being lost,
yep.
creeping onto Brock, and he's like, but you're just, because I couldn't stay still. Like I do this, do that, even if it's like cleaning the house, because like I just can't sit down and like, okay, you know?
Yep.
So like anything what can happen. He's like, oh my God, welcome home to this art gallery. Like, you know, he would make fun of me. Like, now it's like better. But like, I just felt like I had to do something at all times because I'm not working and I'm not working on myself in the sense of like my job that I would love to do. So I try to fill that time with some other things, you know, and so, he would come home and he'd be like, you know what? I would love if you would tell me after I came home from practice that all you did was binge watched a season of something on Netflix. And I'm like, yeah, no.
I'm the same in terms of activity. Like I feel one of my biggest fears, I have a couple of them, but one of my biggest fears is wasting time on this earth. You know, like I don't want to feel like I sat all day at home and I didn't do anything, because it feels like I'm here to do something creative. I'm here to do something and to create something, to leave something behind and kind of be useful. So to me, my question is, how did you discover your purpose on a day-to-day basis, you know, like the purpose of like after you calm yourself down, you work out and you're still contemplating about yourself, about your future. So what was the kind of like epiphany that you had in terms of your purpose and your rediscovery?
I mean, I would say this. There was a time that I tried to discover myself in different like ways. And I became a personal trainer. So that was one of the things I did. I did a course and I started working when I was in Istanbul. But then, you know, it's like working in Istanbul is like, it was sort of on the good days, like 20-minute drive from home. On a bad day, it's 1.5 hours, you know? And I work to train a girl or two. And then I have to like come back home and I pay more for parking than I have made. You know what I mean? Not that necessarily, I don't want it to sound like arrogant, but at that point, it's not necessarily you do it for money, you know, because I'm just trying to make myself like.
Yeah, sane. Useful. Yeah, useful. Yeah. Useful. You want to feel useful.
Yes. So at this point, it's like, okay, but I'm still like not making anything. It's just an outing to the gym that I have to drive for 1.5 hours into, you know? So like I did that for a while and it was cool, but you know, and yep. I love working out, but I feel like I realize it's not, I don't necessarily love working out other people. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love being in the gym. Because it's like different. Like maybe they're unmotivated or that. I'm like, it's just sort of like, okay, like you have to be motivated. You know what I mean? Coming from like someone who loves going to the gym, it's like, it's really hard to like understand how people are unmotivated, or there are a lot of things that come across. But, and then I try to come up with some kind of business, some kind of this, some kind of that, but it's just like, I don't know. And that's back to me. Like I would always find ways to tell myself why not to do things. Mm-hmm. Like, who am I? Why? I did my YouTube channel. And then I'm like, I talk myself out of it. I'm like, what kind of fool am I? What am I doing? Who's watching me? Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's terrible. And I'm actually thinking of restarting my YouTube again.
You should
I'm
do it.
I'm trying to tell myself that I'm just doing it for myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I think the life, like, you know, you wanted me to talk about this life that we're living, you know, and it's interesting. It's not, people don't know. And
yeah, it's not a standard life. It's not a standard life.
People don't understand, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah. But I have had a thing of like, but I think it's also a part of identity crisis that I would just always think like, I always wanted to feel that passion that I felt for basketball. And then anything else that came was not even close enough. And then I just drop it because I just kept searching for that one, the same thing, you know?
You want to ignite the fire. And I felt that also when I went away, when I was in Moscow and I was not on a day-to-day basis around the team, you feel like there's a fire missing within you because you have these emotional impulses. Your day-to-day life is different. Then you feel like you're rediscovering yourself on a different area. So there's like something you give away, but something you take as well. But Jordan Peterson talked about it. I heard it just lately, like a couple of weeks ago. The biggest mistakes people do between the 20 and 30 is that they just they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do with themselves. They don't know what work to do. And they just don't do anything. They just sit still and they do the same thing over and over. Whereas, like you were doing, you tried one thing, you tried a different thing, you try to start a business, you try to be a personal trainer. And at least you go somewhere and you find out that you, that's not for you, you can still correct. And you're further ahead than you were when you, if you wouldn't have done anything, if you were just sat at home and not knowing what you do, you just kind of sit still and you're still there. So 5 years from now, you would still be there. But now you already have some accumulated knowledge already about where you don't want to be. And then you can, of course, correct and you can keep going. So I would encourage you to do the YouTube channel if that's what you feel like. And then you feel like after a year or 2 or 3 years, maybe it's not for you and maybe something else comes along. But doing is better than not doing. And that's my general MO. Like, I don't know the general attitude I have.
For sure. For sure. I mean, also like learning things about yourself, like that's a major thing, you know?
Like, yeah, you're discovering yourself. Like, you're doing something and you kind of like, you go into yourself and like, oh, I didn't know I can react like this. I didn't know I have this in me, you know? So there's certain things that I think people have to do. And I think in your situation is even more special because you are, or you were alone at a lot of times during that during the first periods in a foreign country, and you had to figure out things on your own. But when Brock comes home or came home and you guys, like, how did you guys balance the time together? Because you have to, you want to make up for some time and you want to spend time together as well. What was the time before the baby arrived? We're going to get to that. But when you were trying to spend time together, how did you balance that? And how did you keep also in perspective that Brock has to prepare himself for practice, for games, mentally, sleep-wise? There's a certain kind of balance, but you also had to have some time together. So how did you manage? How did you plan the time together from when you came back from road trips?
So I think he's very good at, like, not saying that to leave things at work because it's not really possible, but like when he's at home, we would spend sort of, okay, we have a lot, like, we love basketball, both of us. So that's already like, even us watching EuroLeague at home is spending time together. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And like, I love that. He loves that. Then we would just go, I don't know. I think he's like, yeah, he's very good at like, okay, I'm at home now. Like, we're together. And, you know, mm-hmm. then we come up with things to do and go explore or eat or whatever. So that would be our time together. Then, of course, there's like naps and all these things where it's like I have to be respectful of, you know, like, okay, it's a pregame nap. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you find out that balance of things, I guess, as you go and grow as a couple.
And, you know, like, obviously, there's also like the exploring part is huge in a new city, but there is no travel time. Like, oh, let's take a weekend off. Let's take a couple of days off to go during the season to go somewhere and see a different city. There's none of that. So you basically are in the same city and you have to rediscover and find new hobbies together, right?
Yeah. And also most of the times I'm like, you know, if Brock finds a cool restaurant that he likes to eat, he could go there for the rest of the season. Like, he doesn't have a problem. For me, I'm like, I love to try new things. So in most of the times, it would be that when he's away, I go around, explore. And then if it's worthwhile, then I bring him on his next day off. You know what I mean? So then that's probably the dynamics to this day.
So once the baby, how old is your son?
He's 2 actually on Sunday.
Oh, nice. Nice. Also a May child. I'm a male May child as well. So 2 years. So you guys Valencia. Were in Valencia. Okay. In Valencia.
He's Spanish, once, Australian, and Lithuanian.
Awesome. Great. He can choose. He can choose what he wants to play for. All the countries will be fighting for him. To get the citizenship. So once the baby arrived, and it changed a lot of dynamics as well, I'm sure, within the daily structure of your life. What were the biggest negotiations or the biggest accommodations you had to do in terms of like finding the grips of like Brock's career and family life put together?
You know, I think that now thinking back to like the first year with a baby, it's like, I don't think that as much as like the basketball or Brock's career had a lot to do, because the only thing I can think about is COVID. That was the part that like, it was just not, I can't say ruined, but like it made it really, really hard. And I think it gave me a sort of misshapen view of motherhood, because, you know, like everyone says, it takes a village. And during the first year I was alone, you know, because the COVID, no one could come visit. And like, I, having Brock like leave and I'm alone with a baby, and like, okay, you could get a nanny, but then do I want someone out from outside coming into our home during COVID when we live in Istanbul? And he was born in Valencia, then, but in May, so the season finished, then we went to Australia, spent 2 weeks in the lockdown, in the quarantine.
Wow.
I don't know how we did it, honestly.
Wow.
And I don't know what was going on through our heads, but anyway, we did it. Then we spent a month and a half in Australia, then moved back to Istanbul for Galatasaray. Mm-hmm. And that's when, like, you know, city of so many people, like, I'm not sure I want the nanny to take public transport to come to my home, that I can get everyone on the team sick, basically. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a thin, like, thin line. And I was like, okay, like, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. And then you think that you're fine, and, you know, lack of sleep, small baby, lack of, like, figuring everything out, like, it's new, you know? And then you suddenly feel like, I mean, things that you can do on yourself, by yourself, and like for you, are sort of being minimized to the, you know, the lowest. And I'm so happy that I had Edgar Solanova's wife, and we have babies. They're 2 weeks apart. So, and they were living in Istanbul that year. So that was like, it was amazing. That was literally like my savior, you know, mentally, because first of all, we were going through the same things at the same time with the babies. So that's one thing. Then living in the same city, it was really nice. But yeah, the tough part was that there was no one could come visit. There's still COVID, huge restrictions there and there. And I'm like, so that mainly was the key of like things that they look so different when the baby came. Because, you know, I think that the basketball, like, we obviously we made it work, and, you know, Brock would still take his naps, and, you know, on game days, like and then he's really nice. He would let me sleep in when he's at home, you know? So like, there are things that you just work out. I don't know. You just, you know, you have to do things and you do it, sort of.
Did you feel like you were sacrificing a little bit of your lifestyle, and or do you feel like it was something that you embraced, and as well as, because there was a lot of challenges with that, especially living in Istanbul, there's certain frustrations that come in and set in, and like you said, you had Edgar Solanova's wife there as well, and you could share the experiences, which is very, very gratifying for the soul, if we talk about a little bit deeper. But did you feel like you're missing out at a certain point on other things, or was that something that came natural because that was the situation? COVID is there. You embrace the situation with a newborn kid in the old new city that you already know more or less. And I don't know. I'm not sure if anybody can know Istanbul,
you ever can
ever. But you felt like you were in a different world, I can imagine. So there's a lot of negotiations, a lot of challenges that came with that. What were like the biggest things that you were felt like you were missing out on, if at all?
Well, like, I think you're right as when you say that I really try to embrace the situation, whatever it was, you know, like I want to believe I'm not like a person who likes to moan a lot about things being bad and whatever, like until I have a day or two that it all sort of weighs down on me finally, and that's when I'm like, okay, for one day I'm broken, you know, like I'm like done, like I cry, I'm like, oh my god, and then I'm like, next day I get some sleep, I get a nap in, and that's a life-changing thing. And, you know, try to, you know, look what I always try to look at the life with the, you know, with the positivity. So so I guess, like, even though now looking back it's like, okay, it was tough, but at the same time, you know, I just I had to do what I had to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's just our life, and that's what we do. So
but sleep was very important. I mean, we both have our Oura Ring.
I check the app. That's the first thing I do. I'm like, okay, let's update the app, see how my sleep went. Anything above 90, I'm like, whoa, today's my day.
with the kid and especially with the baby, with the newborn, I can imagine that sleep pattern was off completely. How did you manage the sleep pattern in regards to Brock's playing and preparation? Because I know some families, they, when there is a newborn and they have big games coming up or just schedule as well, sometimes the husband sleeps in a living room just to be, or in a separate room just to be apart and just to have a good night's sleep so they can perform well the next night. Did you guys have something like that where you managed the sleep because of the baby's sleep pattern?
So I guess we were very lucky, and we still are. Our baby is like, knock on wood, I don't know if it can change this really suddenly. That like, he's never been like a crier. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's crying, that means, okay, he's got hungry, his nappy needs changing, or he wants to sleep. Like, this is like pretty simple. So I think we had it easy in the sense that it's like trying, or then he's sick that one few off times that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's not, I'll just feed him at night and then that's it. He doesn't cry. Like, he keeps on sleeping, you know? So I would have to wake up usually like on average, like twice, and then that's it. And so it was easy for Brock. I don't think he ever really had a problem like with, then if he has to wake up like before the game days, like he obviously is not waking up to help me. It's not really like I need help because I was breastfeeding till 17 months. So like there's nothing he can do for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I carry the good stuff. So he needs me to be the baby. So why does he need to wake up if I'm like, I can do it by myself, you know? But then I would rather if he can, then if there's no games or he's at home, like then I'd rather like sleep in for another half an hour extra than that. Mm-hmm. That would be my, you know? So in that sense, I think we were pretty lucky. We never had him to like move into a different room, like, or to sleep, sorry, in a different room. So he would get his rest. So that was pretty lucky.
I mean, that's for an athlete, that's probably the best baby you can have. In terms of sleep.
Although right now it's a little tough because like, as I said, he's two. And when Brock needs to take his naps, I need to get out of the house with him because it's just, he is very active, hence probably my genes, you know. Can't be mad. So like he needs to get into everything, and then he's like, "Daddy, daddy!" Like he's not around. He knows he's in the house, so he's like going, opening the doors, and like I'm like, just, "Okay, we're leaving now."
Yeah, it's certain things. Also, I think people don't understand that if you like, there's a risk. It's a different career. It's a different lifestyle in terms of like basketball, athlete preparation, naps, sleeping, early sleep. Like there's a certain schedule, and the whole family has to be respectful of that in terms of leaving, because that's like, he's working for the family as well. Like it's a performance based business. So naturally you want them to perform as good as they can. And now you are also back in performing publicly, because you are rejuvenating and starting a career. So there's a next stage also now in your life. How do you, like you're working now for Basket News, and you also have a website that you're running as well, right? MartinaMoten.com. For everybody who's interested, visit Martina's blog.
It's a good update, but yes, have a look.
But it's a beautiful site. It's a very, very beautiful colors and lots of pictures and articles. And you can see your active lifestyle, and that you are a doer. You're not just a sitter. You're a doer. So, but how did you feel going into the next stage, and how did you go about finding the next niche while you have a kid, while your husband is having a basketball career, and you are determined to have also your own identity and your career? How did you go about finding the next step?
I guess, you know, like I said, like I tried this, tried that. That's the only way how you can learn. And to everyone who are like, even now, like I do some lectures and for students about sports communication, and they ask me, oh, how did you know? It's like, without trying, you're never going to know, you know. Yeah. You have to get your hands on things and like to see if that fits you at all. So like, I don't know, I'm not an amazing writer, and I wish I was more of a doer. Thank you very much for that. Because I always do myself a lot of like, a lot of shit for not doing more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah. Like, I always think that like I could be doing more anyway, but I'm working on that daily. but yeah, so I don't know. I did created my blog, my YouTube channel. I was like, okay, I'm doing this just to like, cause I have that creativity in me and I need that outlet sort of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good way of like, you know, now there are things like that that you can do anywhere from anywhere. So as long as I have a laptop and internet connection. So we're blessed with that. So that, I guess, makes things easy. But then a few things that happened to me during, like while we were still in Istanbul, like, cause I guess being in Žalgiris and, you know, I wouldn't say a public person, but, you know, talking about basketball and everyone seeing my videos and interviews and whatever. So like I had people coming to me with different sort of projects, mm-hmm. basketball projects, which was a great sort of a little like drops of the life than the work that I love, you know?
Yeah.
So I worked with the Lithuanian Basketball Federation on this game app. I don't know if you know, for Eurobasket, mm-hmm. a few years back. It's cool. It was cool. It's something like I've never created before. It's a game, you know, with basketball. So that was nice. I was doing a little bit of marketing for that. So those kind of things like kept me in the game, if I may say that. and then this summer, I don't know if I like, I don't know if you believe in manifestation. I do. And like, I always, you know, in the back of my head, my basketball work was always there, you know? Mm-hmm. So then mm-hmm. when Basket News, I was with like daydream about it. So when Basket News came and like, said like, hey, we're creating basketnews.com, because previously it was only a Lithuanian site, mm-hmm. and they would love to have me for their content creation in English. And I was like, oh my God, that is exactly, you know, like I don't have a problem speaking English. And that's like back into the basketball world. And it gives me an opportunity to travel, to do interviews in like different EuroLeague cities. And it's just like, it was the best thing that could happen at that time after the year in Istanbul, where, as I said before, it was a little, you know, a little tough of like, motherhood took over that year, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's dig into that a little bit. So what exactly do you do for basketnews.com in terms of like job description of the content that you produce? And second question is, how do you balance that with your kid being at home? Like, you're in Monaco right now where Brock is playing. How do you balance those two things and just basically living life still as normal, more or less?
So my job description is a video content creator. I have a show called N1 on YouTube. And it's so I have interviews, one-on-one interviews about with basketball players about, it's being called N1 because it's like that's, you know, outside of the court things. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty fun. I've traveled to quite a few cities this season, and every city I do a few interviews at a time. And I really enjoyed it so far.
You mostly talk to players about those, their daily lives?
Their daily lives, their likes, their, from food to cars to now mm-hmm. we started to change a little bit the concept of it. And like, we have some trick questions about like, you know, bench cut or play and, you know, fine, putting them in like different situations.
That. Yeah, that's
which
tough.
Is always fun.
That's tough. That's tough for players.
Yeah, I know. I kind of feel bad. I still need to get better at it because I feel bad when I see like Aaron White's interview. And it's like, he's like, no, no. And I'm like, I was trying to save him, which the guys after are like, don't try to save him. That's the whole point. I'm like, okay. So yeah, that's the job.
And how do you balance that with your family life, with your kid being at home? And I suppose there's a nanny involved somewhere.
No.
No. Okay. All right. Kindergarten.
Yeah. So I have a kindergarten 3 times a week now since February. Mm-hmm. So that's been helpful. But so like I would travel once a month, basically. For like 3 days. The first time when I had to travel, my mom was here, luckily, so she could nanny. So technically nanny is kind of involved. Then I went to Istanbul. I took the baby with me. Baby's name is Maverick. Let's call him Maverick. He has a really cool name, I think.
Yes, he does.
I'm very biased. But so I took Mav with me. And I mean, it's pretty crazy because he was already 1.5. So he's full on. And, you know, me trying to balance, that was the real deal of trying to balance it, you know, because obviously being there and trying to focus on the interviews. And we also filmed during the trip, which we filmed like a vlog of the trip, of like behind the scenes, how our work is, and like day to day, you know, little things, because a lot of things that happen. And so having him there, well, technically, I kind of lied because nanny is involved, but like, you know, not like I don't have a full-time someone here. I just, when I took him to Istanbul, I had my my friend, Erica Balbay, you know, one of the FS wives, she recommended a nanny for me. So that was easy because it's like sort of the city I know. I could ask people for recommendations, and I had the nanny come into the hotel to stay with him while I like leave for an interview, or while he's napping, then we're going to film the vlog, you know, like, so sort of that kind of thing. And then I'm back, then we go for dinner with Jonas from Basket News. And like, you know, he's there with us eating, like, you know, it's full on.
That's cool company. Cool company.
It was definitely the most tiring trip that I've had. Like,
I can imagine.
But you know, like another thing, like, I think, you know, this feeling when like, I don't know, I can be tired when I wake up and like, oh, because I slept. Obviously, my sleep has been interrupted for the past 2 years. You know, like I had maybe 10 nights that I've not been interrupted, but that's about it. So like I wake up like, okay, I love coffee. That's one of the things. But then when I have something important to do that day, I like a different like adrenaline. I don't know how I call this, like a different kick. I have a different feeling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm not going to. Some mornings you can be like a little sluggish, you know, like, oh, okay, where do I start? Kind of.
Yeah.
But then when the days when you have to do work, like let's say in Istanbul, I'm so tired. Like we just flew in there with him and then, okay, I have to do these things. Like I'm not waking up thinking, oh, okay, like, you know, I am doing things now. Like these are the 2-3 days that it's full on. And then sort of the tiredness after you come back home, that's when I feel the tiredness after. It's like, oh my god, what did I just do? Like, I just took him to Istanbul to 4 flights, you know, connection flights back from Nice, and like for 3 days, and now I'm back now. And then it just suddenly hits me, like, I'm like, oh god, what did I do? Like, that is sort of after, you know. And it's nice that everything is accomplished, because I like there's no time to be tired at the point when you're like working.
Exactly. It's like there's a certain amount of adrenaline the whole time in you. And then you're just going with the flow the whole time, running. And then once you settle down, it's just kind of like everything just calms down and you just probably want to sleep all day long, I can imagine. But Mav is not letting you sleep, probably.
No. But then those are the days when I'm just like, I don't want anything. I don't want nothing. Like the day after the trip, I'm like, I feel like I've talked it out. I've smiled it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I have nothing left in me.
All the muscles are tired.
Seriously. Just done.
So to finish up our episode, I have a last segment prepared, which I prepare for everybody. It's my ATO questions. And I wanted to call these the basketball relationship ATOs. So the after timeout plays that coaches draw up, I'm going to draw up for you now. And I will put you on the spot as well. I'm not going to save you like you saved Aaron White. I'm not going to save you. So you're going to have to dig
Where's
through.
Where's the exit button on the Zoom call?
I have the exit button. Nobody else has the exit.
Okay, let's go.
So I prepared 6 ones, but then each one has a separate idea behind it. So the first one, the top three attributes for a player wife that you think a player wife should have.
You see, I can say that, but then also I've seen so many different people who like, they're amazing wives, you know what I mean? So it's like I think for me personally, what I think works a lot is that we both love basketball. Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that we have a common interest in. Mm-hmm. You know, we watch NBL, like Australian League, we watch Euro League, we watch Euro Cup, like all these things, like we talk about it, we, you know, so yep. It's a topic. I would say that for me, but not for everybody.
Okay. I mean, it's that's where we're talking to you. Like the most important things that you felt like are important for a healthy relationship in this world.
Cause you know, like, to add on to that, like I think that life can get really miserable if you also not love basketball or don't like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because then now at least like I always follow, I always go to the games. I, you know, never missed Brock's games, even in Rio Olympics. Like it's just, you know?
Yeah. It's
like
a passion. It's a passion.
Yeah.
Common interest, basketball.
Yeah.
One.
Then being adaptable, is that a word?
Adaptive. Yeah, being adaptive to different situations. Yeah. Yep. Adaptable. So, adaptable is correct. Yep.
Yeah. So like from situations, whatever life throws at you, really, because you know, you never know when where you're going next year or not all the time. And
so adaptability, flexibility, more or less, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like open-mindedness, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Also, like I think that understanding that his career has an expiration date. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's another thing. Like I could say, oh, but I want to work too, and I want to like do things now. But for me, it doesn't really have an expiration date. Sort of, you know, if I really wanted to, and things fell the way I would like them to, I could work like further until, you know, whatever age. Well, Brock's career now, that's what he's doing. You know, he's trying to, you know, it's just limited amount of time. So all I can do as a supportive wife is now to like, you know, the main focus is still him. Mm-hmm. You want it or not, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know where I was going with that, but it's not one of the points probably, but it's just probably to add on to the second one.
Yep. It's adaptability. You're adapting to Brock's lifestyle.
And third, I don't know, you know, a positive outlook on things. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard. And I've met people before that I was like, not many though, but you know, when everything is bad, but it's not bad. Like they just make it sound like everything is bad. It's hard. Like even like me hanging out with these people, I'm like, I feel like heavy, you know? I'm like, no, things are fine. But you know, there are people like that. Yep. So I think like, you know, less moaning and more being grateful for the way things are, like just lightness, positivity and
gratefulness.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Being more grateful for the situation, because it is a positive lifestyle compared to a lot of like majority of the world. So there is a positive outlook that's necessary and a reality check that many people have to go through. But those are
and
three good.
It's all
good...
temporary too, you know. Even if it's like bad sometimes, it's always temporary, sort of, you know.
Yes. Yep. I agree. Next one. Which are the pitfalls? This is more like a relationship question, but I am like just in general, because specifically to a player's lifestyle, which pitfalls to avoid when being alone. While Brock is not around, or while the second your better half is not around, like what are the pitfalls to avoid? You know what I mean by pitfall?
Yeah. Like closing out from the world, maybe, like, you know, just like, cause then it's depressive, you know, you can get depressive. Like it's, and then as I said, cause you are alone a lot of times and you close out of from the surroundings, from people around you, then it can be like 100 times tougher, you know? So I think that would be one of the things, like there, whatever city you are in, whatever place you are in, there's always things to find that you like to do. So I think all you need to do as a wife, not that I'm giving advice for wives, but like just to find that little thing that, you know, makes you like happy. Like, I don't know. Yeah. For me, like second year in Istanbul, I started playing tennis because that was my childhood dream. And like, I always wanted to learn. And I was like, okay, I mean, it's a great place. Why not? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Be open. Like, do it.
Yeah. So that definitely, like for me, that's a big thing.
All right. Third thing, biggest career advice for a player wife.
Well, you know what? I'll say this. It kind of sucks. This whole thing when I'm like, I was working before being just Martina.
Yeah.
And then being Martina Modem, doing the same work. It's like, okay, first of all, you know, people who wouldn't know my, like the way my career went from the beginning, and like, not a lot of people know, I guess, like that, yeah. I've been into this. It's like, oh, is she doing, how did she get here? Is she here because she's a wife? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
so many stereotypes that I was mm-hmm. like, but then on the other side, on the other hand, when it's like, girls, I don't know how to even say that. I need a minute.
Take your time.
That it's tough. Like being a woman in a men's world, take it as the sports industry, as basketball industry.
Yep.
It's like, it's kind of like, I'm not crying and like, oh, it's so bad. No, but it's still like, it comes with different, you know, like I said, stereotypes, different things. So like, and then being a basketball wife or like, yeah, being a Brock's wife at this point, it's like, it's either in some people's view, it can help. In some people's view, it's like, it's an advantage or a disadvantage. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's just different.
But that's when, like, going back to your positive outlook, you look at the positive side of it, not the negative side of it. That's important to realize as well, that, you know, you have a positive outlook on things, and it's not because of Brock that you have this job. It's because of who you are as a person that gave you this opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. It's just, there was a, like, to add on to the, going back to the identity crisis, like, in, if I could call that in Istanbul, it's like, before, when I was in Lithuania, I was like, oh, Martina, you know, from Žalgiris, you know?
Yeah.
That's like the street name. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I can come to Istanbul and like, not many people know what I was doing. And I'm just like, oh, that's Brock's wife. So that was another big thing of like, it's just a name change, really, you know?
Yeah.
So like, suddenly when I was like, oh, Martina. And then they knew me maybe before they knew Brock, in that sense that I started, you know, a few months earlier in Žalgiris than him, really. Like, so in that sense, but then being just Brock's wife, oh, Brock's wife.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like inside me, like, I'm a passionate person. I'm an emotional person in a sense. So like inside me, I'm like, I'm so much more than that, but like, not in a bad way. Like, I love being Brock's wife, you know, like,
that's an amazing thing
to be called. Like, I love that. But at the same time, I would be like, you know, like, you guys don't know, like, you know, sort of, I don't know. It's hard to.
Yeah. I totally understand when you feel like you already have accomplished certain things and you feel like you are somebody, you feel like you have a little bit of identification, you know, you have an ID, and then all of a sudden it's like going in and like quotation marks, you know, just the wife of Brock Modem, like, you know, like people don't understand that everybody was also a person beforehand, and nobody wants to be just somebody, you know, like just his brother, just whoever. And that's a certain thing to distinguish. And I think it takes a strong person to deal with that and to understand that, like, this person just don't know, you know, he or she just don't understand. And that's fine. Like that's their problem. I know who I am. And it's a reality check. It's a check for yourself. Like, you know, like, ooh, like that kind of hurt. That's kind of like, that stings a little bit, but it's their problem because they don't know, you know, like, I have to deal with it now, but it's in reality, I can't let those emotions affect me because that person just doesn't know, you know?
For sure, for sure. But like adding on to the that time in Istanbul when it was hard, and that's when it like would get to me more, you know? And then when I realized and came to, you know, came to the reality that I was like, okay, this is how it is now. And that's fine. That's great. You know, I need to embrace whatever life we're living now and whatever things are happening. Then it was fine. But at the, in the very beginning, when I was still struggling inside myself, that's when it was sort of hitting me harder than, you know?
Yeah. It's a compounding effect. You know, one thing you already struggle with, and then it comes another thing.
And like,
another
thing. It's exactly that painful spot, you know, and it's like, oh my.
I feel you. I understand. I totally understand it. Okay. I'll skip that one because we talked already about the baby life. We already explored that baby life. But two more things that I wanted to get into. Biggest advice for the woman's half.
One never single stop advice. Doing your own thing. Like, okay. In that sense, like, it doesn't fit to your answer, sort of.
Yeah, it fits. It fits. Yeah. Keep searching, keep doing.
It's just, I think that in the beginning, it's like also very hard to like just dive in and only try to be the wife, because everything sort of points to that direction, you know? Yeah. Then it's like, okay, you're away from everyone, you're here for your husband with your husband, you know? So like everything is sort of like, oh, you know, you can easily lose yourself, like you lose your identity and just be there, you know? And then when you realize that when it might be happening, that's when it's really tough. Cause like, I think, you know, you need to go back to the things that like makes you happy and make you who you are, and like keeps that fire in you.
Yeah.
As well as, because then it's more fun for everyone. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's more fun for the husband too. Like when it's yes. like, you know, you have a person next to you who's like, I don't know, well-read, well, you know, like the little things. It doesn't have to be like, I'm not saying that you just do you. You have to like, I don't know, leave the husband, travel the world, you know? But like, you just, not leave like permanently, but I'm saying like, just travel all the time or something. Like, but you just, yeah, just small things can put that fire in you, and then it's overall a better deal for everyone.
Be your own personality, which also gives a little bit different color in the relationship, because you can't just be, you know, like nobody wants to have somebody at home who's just like doing nothing, just being, you know, like you want to have some sort of exchange when you come at home. You want to have conversations. You want to talk about things, essential things that matter in life. You want to have deeper conversations. So you have to have some sort of personality and be your own girl, basically, right? Be your own woman. Sure. Girl at heart. I'm a boy at heart, but I'm a, you know, grown-ups. So last one, and that's a big one. What's the biggest advice for the men's half? Like, I mean, you and Brock went through different situations and probably had a lot of different situations arise, but what's the one biggest advice you have for the men's half?
I think the one thing that I'm very proud of Brock, and like, I'm very happy that he's the way he is, like the support. It's like, you know, he would try to understand when I was going through the tougher time that, okay, like this is what's happening now. And like, he would always say like, look, you can do anything. Like, just find that thing that you want to do. But you know, it's then again, from his side, it's like easy to say, you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very nice of him to say nonetheless. So I think the support is very important, because like, no matter what the player himself is going through, like having that person next to you, like he needs to understand that the sacrifices are made from that side too. You know, it's not just like, you know, I'm balling, I'm living this cool life. Cool. It's a cool life. Like, it's, you know, it's tough at times. It's cool at times. It's, you know, it's what it is. But like, so they need to understand sort of that. And I am sure majority of them really do, that the person next to them has made the sacrifice too. Like, it's not just, you know, it's not easy, but yeah.
It's a certain amount of emotional intelligence that it takes to understand that there is also a sacrifice being made on the other side, which also can vice versa, it can flip around easily at some point. You know, like there's some sacrifices have to be made maybe later by Brock. Who knows? Like nobody knows. Like when he's finishing his career, whenever that's going to be, he and I talked to some players who have already finished their career. So there's challenges that will come as well, where you like identity crisis, where you're questioning certain things, the next steps, your who you are, because you're not living in a team anymore. So there has to be a mutual understanding and mutual intellectual exchange of like going inside yourself, understanding the situation. This is what it is, and somehow resolving both sides. Like, you know, it has to be an open communication in terms of resolving and understanding the sacrifice that's being made at that moment. So kudos to Brock for being understandable. Understanding.
He's very amazing for that. I'm very happy. Definitely. He's you know, I hope I've helped him a little bit, but he's also helped me through this, you know, road that we're taking.
for sure. It's a windy road, you know, and you both discover certain things and different things at the same time, because you're living together and you're living apart, because, you know, the travels, but it's a windy road and there's a lot of exploring to do along the road. And I'm sure you guys have lots of exploring ahead of you together.
Yeah, for sure.
So Martina, it was fun. It was great. It was very insightful. It's those things I always try to dig into, you know, like the identity behind the scenes, you know, like there's a lot of things that the person needs to be understood as well. And I felt like you painted a really good picture today for people outside to understand what it's like to live behind the scenes and what it's like, what life is like. But tell people how they can find you. Tell if you have any last thoughts about it, about your life, about your situation, share and tell people how they can find you.
So I think that one of the main things that I wanted, like one last thought is like, I never wanted to come across, if I did, that it's like, you know, like for outside people, it feels like this, as I said, like, oh, so amazing. But, you know, there are also things that are not as amazing, but like, it's really hard to understand for people not going through this, you know, like, mm-hmm. Oh, you guys are living at amazing places all the time. And you're like doing this. But then you think about it, you're like, okay, but then I'm alone a lot, or with Maverick, with my best pal. And then, you know, we have little time with Brock together, or then we have to move our things. Like we still don't have a home to this day. So, you know, like it's because it really doesn't make sense to purchase a home yet, but like, or a car, we've not owned a car. Like, like this life is weird. You know? Yeah, like tell that to somebody who's like, yeah, you're 31 and you've never owned a car, you know? It's like sort of like weird things, but they make this life, like, I guess, interesting. And we'll definitely have some stories to tell. And when we're older, and even to our friends who, you know, who lead different lives and are more settled in one place. And yeah, so that's it. And where to find me? It's Martina Modum. Usually I use my Instagram the most. Then kind of made a promise here that my YouTube will be back. So I'm working on that, and it's also Martina Modum.
All right.
Yeah, if anyone wants to check out my videos, it's called End One on basketmuse.com.
All right. Yeah, we're all living a unique lifestyle, and we're both appreciative of it. And thanks for everybody. Thanks everybody for listening and for watching. And we'll be back soon with more. Thank you, Martina. And
thank you.
Best regards to everybody.
See ya.
Au revoir.